jazz. You're my dream come true, and all that jazz. Baby, you're too much. You got the skin I love to touch, the skin I love to touch too much, and all that jazz. You have got the lips that suit my taste, and your fingertips can't be replaced. Oh, baby, what you've got, nobody has. And I got you and all that jazz. So dwee dwee do 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 boo boo.
And all that jazz. And all that jazz.
Baby, you're too much. You got the skin that I love to touch, the skin I love to touch too much.
And all that jazz.
You have got the lips.
And all that jazz.
She's not really too hip.
And all that jazz.
Oh, baby, what you got, nobody has. I got you and all that jazz. Here we go. I'm in love with you, pretty baby, and all that jazz. You are my dream come true, and all that jazz. Baby, you are really too much. You've got the skin that I love to touch, the skin I love to touch too much, and all that jazz. You have got the lips that suit my taste, and your fingertips, they cannot be replaced. Oh, baby, what you got, jazz.
Yeah, baby. Well, wrong tune to open with, but you know what? I think I needed it. Mel Torme. Piece of music that was done in a 1996 film starring Sammy Davis Jr. called Man Called Adam. Interesting stuff. Welcome on this Thursday evening, The Edge of Darkness, Jeffrey Bennett. Interesting. I got off the air last night. I don't know what I did. Did I pass out for a while? Did I fix something to eat? I think I did. I don't recall sleeping at all last night. I think I did, though. And I woke up 2 o'clock in the morning, and or maybe I was trying to go to sleep. Finally said the hell with it and got out of here for a while. Came back, still couldn't sleep. Then I had somebody coming over at 10 o'clock this morning, and she was here till almost 12:30. She's the mother of my youngest granddaughter. And after she left, I passed out hard, and the alarm woke me up to get ready for the program. Oh, my God, what a day. What a rare day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in. It's almost like being in, I want to go back to sleep. we got things to talk about tonight. It's been a strange week of programming. Things keep coming my way, and I know that at one point in time, I think shortly before my guest got here today, Kayla, I received an email from one of my writers. Interesting piece to publish. And not realizing it, not that it made any difference, which you'll understand why in just a moment. She wrote this in January of 2021. I mean, that's over 2.5 years ago. And I sit there saying, my God, what's changed? And this is not all that uncommon. I think we're finding that writers could more and more go back to their old stuff and find out that they were on the game then. I mean, how many times do I re-air a program that I recorded over 20 years ago that I could have recorded this very day? Interesting. The political jargon and posturing that one hears these days seems to suggest that we are in an era unlike any that has ever occurred before, my friends. Ah, hope springs anew. There's light at the end of the tunnel. Politicians gush. And for those of our elites who really want to impress with their knowledge of history, we'll now and then get a reference to Abe Lincoln, which may or may not fit the bill nicely. You know, a new birth of freedom. No, I'd agree something certainly is in the process of being birthed. But I'd be hard-pressed to call that baby freedom. Some would even say that this baby better bears the opposing name of totalitarianism. Ah, but come on, before we throw labels around, it's helpful to know what we mean by such terms. What does totalitarianism actually look like? In a book that was written in 1953 by Robert Nisbet, the book was entitled The Quest for Community. Oh, a title like that would never be used today. But in that book, four very specific things were brought to the forefront. Politics is everything. Yeah. In the totalitarian order, the political tie becomes the all-in-all, according to Nisbet. Gone is the importance of the individual. Instead, individuals become cogs in the machine of a centralized government. And that situation creates a psychological setting that alone makes possible the massive remaking of the human consciousness. All I can say is go back to 1953 and that guy talks well above the head of the average person in this country today. Second answer, hiding behind a front of democracy. Oh, God. Yep. Totalitarian government. The author inferred that totalitarian government does not wish to appear as the controlling centralized power that it actually is. No. Instead, the power of the government must seem to proceed from the basic will of the people. Well, thus, when authoritarian laws are passed, they will be framed as necessary for the preservation of democracy, even when it can be clearly seen that nothing could be further from the truth. For doing so enables the government to, quote, bend, soften and corrode the will to resistance in preference to forcible and brutal breaking of the will. Number three, diversity is abolished. You see, diversity is a pet issue for many. in our government, in our culture today. And yet what people fail to realize is that under totalitarian rule, the natural diversity of society is swept away. Maybe picked up, flushed down the toilet. In its place comes militaristic conformity to the party line in art and in politics, in science and economy. Totalitarian government, it seems, is cancel culture on steroids. That's much I got to say, though, is 65 years ago, that term cancel culture was never used. But then we get to the final one. New replaces old. Yeah. Perhaps one of the most prominent features of a totalitarian regime is its quest to replace the old with the new. And that past becomes synonymous with the bad, and everything is redefined. History, art, science, morality. All of these things must be redesigned, placed in a new context in order to make a power, a seamless web of certainty and conformity. And the replacement of the new with the old is necessary because, as Nisbet explained, totalitarianism is an ideology of nihilism. But nihilism is not enough. And thus, while totalitarianism must remove the old in order for its new ideology to function, it also recognizes that something must fill the void left by the loss of faith and community. And to that end, it attempts to implement a larger group effort which points back to the political and offers allegiance to the state. The state. Jawohl. But the question remains as to whether we have seen these traits play out in our own society today. Is politics everything these days? Certainly seems like it. One almost has to become a Luddite in order to get away from hearing political conversation, even when one is not bombarded with politics on the news. Political jargon somehow manages to creep into our private lives at work, our conversations, even our entertainment options. In my particular case, it's continual when I can't sleep. The brain does not stop functioning. The hate, the anger, the dissatisfaction of all that goes on in this country and around this world today. What about democracy? What about diversity? These terms are thrown around a lot these days, but whether or not we're really seeing democracy in action or experiencing true diversity or thought is up for debate in an era where genuine censorship is happening right before our very eyes. And finally, where is the old being whitewashed by the new? We don't have to look far. Toppled statues abound. A couple years ago, the 1619 Project was being promoted and exemplified, an attempt to change and undermine the historical narrative. Younger generations now accept sexual immorality as normal. Even science seems to drift along with the political winds. Sexual immorality? I guess it depends on which sex you think you are today. If we are indeed experiencing totalitarian government more than ever, how can we keep ourselves from being sucked into the vortex, simply becoming another mindless cog in the totalitarian machine? The simple answer seems to be to swim upstream, foster those things which totalitarian government is against. If totalitarianism wants us to erase our memories of history, community, and morality and faith, that we must cling tightly to those very things, my friends. This memory muscle can be strengthened by reading good books, studying history, discussing the gleanings from these sources with others. A couple of key things. The memory muscle can be strengthened by reading good books, studying history. It's interesting, when Kayla was here today, amongst the things we were looking at were my 8 foot tall, 8 foot wide bookshelves, which are jammed with art related books and writings, political stuff, biographies, autobiographies, film related things, a massive collection of historical books, some of which I own that were printed back in the 1800s, that are in still perfect condition. I don't think Kayla ever looked at the books before when she lived here for a while with Mark, our son. She was shocked at some of the stuff we have. Some of this stuff is going to go to her very soon as I begin to clean this place out. It's not being sold to her. It's being given to her. I have two granddaughters over there to take care of, to make sure that we've got the ability to reach out to them, to teach them, so that maybe we'll have a generation that's raised that's not as twisted and screwed up as those that we're facing today. And so we talk about reading good books, studying history, discussing, learning the gleanings from these sources with others. Yeah, regularly attending church, but that's becoming a very interesting issue in this country today, as I read a week ago that the vacating of the churches is becoming almost insurmountable. I think people are beginning to realize that some of the BS being dispensed in the public churches in this country today isn't worth listening to. It's all gobbledygook. But I still believe in getting involved with the community. What the church was, what it is, maybe trying to make a difference. Inviting that community to your home for fellowship might increase that anti-totalitarian music muscle. The last but not least, and I submit this to each and every one of you right now, embrace your family. Expend energy to model good morals and behavior to your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. Because it'll not only be helpful with the current fight against totalitarianism, but for future battles as well. As Nisbet once said, totalitarianism is an affair of mass attitudes. All I can do is submit to you, don't run with the crowd, my friends. Don't run with the crowd. That's something I understand. I don't care to run with the crowd. I'm finding, however, that more and more as time goes by, that I don't even want the crowd around. I don't want to be a part of what they're doing, because most are followers. They're not leaders. There's a website that I visit every day because I'm finding smaller and smaller amounts of things that I even have an interest in. Spends too much time talking about Britney Spears and other stories about the Kardashians. Other show business babes. This murder, that murder, this, that, and the other thing. And yet, they've gotten away from the truth, the reality of some of the other things they used to do. Some profound excellent pieces I've found over the years dealing with cancer-related issues on their site. Education issues. But when you open up this website, and there's at least 8 or 10 different articles about Britney Spears. Oh, my God. What kind of joke is this? It's unreal. Waste of time. My friends, we can ill afford to waste time. I think it was Rolling Stones that once sang a song. Time, time, time is on your side. I disagree with that. No longer is time on our side. It's fighting against us day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute. It is appalling. What we face happens all the time and throughout history. Just before the fall of every great nation. And all this happens when people equate irresponsibility and recklessness, sometimes known as licentiousness, with freedom. Allowing free expression, however, is essential to growth, my friends. But knowing what to say and when is crucial to the Republic's survival. It's kind of like yelling fire in a crowded theater. You can, but should you? It's kind of like that black congressman who a few weeks ago set off a fire alarm in the halls of Congress. He's now being sued for having done so. Turns out that he, before setting off the alarm, went and did some dirty things to make sure that the alarm couldn't be shut off. Things to think about. Because we forget that freedom implies responsibility and a willingness to agree to disagree. It allows everyone, all of us, a choice of what and who to believe. But the most difficult of all is deciding what's most important, the Republic or the individual. I might suggest that without we, the individual, there would be no republic. There could not be the republic. And yet survival of both is necessary, supports each other. Without a strong sense of self, the republic falls. Without a vibrant republic, the individual withers. It's the very definition of symbiosis. Living together for mutual benefit. Symbiosis creates a crucial balance between self and state. There is contention and struggle to restore harmony when either dominates. Well, if this competition continues, you have what permeates our country today. A government gone mad in a massive power grab up against a bewildered populace wondering what in the hell happened to their lives. So the question is asked and should be considered, just who is fanning the flames of discontent? The whole of the media industrial complex is certainly complicit by broadcasting the insanity and editing the relevant background of the story to enhance their narrative. They stir the pot, they never take responsibility. Another misinterpreted freedom. Because, my friends, freedom implies responsibility, not licenses to misbehave, or burn down cities, or rape and pillage and plunder, or destroy monuments that remind us of where we began. How can you measure progress if you erase the markers of your journey? How can you prevent making similar errors in the future when you remove said reminders? The stories that continue to come across my desk of Confederate monuments and statues and things being torn down, some of which are actually located in the, I call it the veteran cemeteries back east, makes you remember Germany preserved several extermination camps as a reminder of the atrocities committed against undesirables. They stand as an example of absolutism in all facets of Germany's past. And how can anyone call to defund law enforcement? They are our conscience when good sense fails and we choose an anti-social direction. Breaking the law? Don't they hold us all accountable? Are they not an extension of our conscience? It's apparent that we are incapable of self-governance or even self-control. See the example in Marxist cities all over our country. Incapable of self-governance or self-control. See the example of Marxist cities in our country? I take a look at San Diego. One section of San Diego my wife and I used to visit on a continual basis. Down with the markets. Down at the pier. Food markets, everything. And two blocks away from this place, in San Diego, California, is a statue of Vladimir Lenin. Unbelievable. Look at the cities in this country. Many are out of control. They're sinking into anarchy. Businesses and individuals flee for self-protection, preservation. Citizens of these states migrate to safer climates, much like the undesirables in World War II Central Europe. I'm reading the massive exodus coming out of Illinois, California. I listen to the stories that Maggie talks about what the hell's going on in Oregon. Oregon! Sickening. The evidence that we see in Democrat socialist, or should we call it Marxist-run cities, all refutes the preposterous claims of any social gain from eliminating the police. These cities are examples of this failed experiment, yet they refuse to admit they're wrong. They do more harm than good. Are they beyond repair? Are they chronically staying their course? All kind of seems like nonsense and lunacy, does it not? But that's where we are today, because we decided that unbounded freedom was preferable to restraint and responsibility. Anything is permissible when wrapped in this freedom of expression because, well, after all, the end justifies the means. And as I see it, the end that we're facing, yeah, well, maybe we'll just meet the means. I like to hope that that phrase haunts the Democratic leadership for the rest of time because it ruined this republic. We judge the individual's rights as paramount, ignoring the impact on society to the detriment of our republic. But our author attempts to demonstrate here a few caveats to any freedom, at least in his mind, our author's mind. But he's confident that they rang true when James Madison and friends drafted the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Ah, yes. Constitutional awareness, sometimes known as civics, was a primary mainstay in classical American education that we sadly abandoned in favor of the Marxist idiotology. A republic cannot survive an uninformed populace. Look around, my friends. Witness the results. Better yet, investigate ancient Rome. Read their history. Discover what brought them down to their knees. What brought down their empire. If you just go to Federal Observer, and in the upper right-hand corner of the page, there's a box that you can put something in. Search. Just type the word Rome in there. The number of articles that we have published about the fall of the Roman Empire is astounding. Go ahead. Do it. Take a look. But that may mean you need to read, you need to study, you need to become more aware than maybe you already are. What brought down the Roman Empire? As Forrest Gump once said, stupid is as stupid does. I'm confident, my friends, that the authors of our Constitution had in mind that these rights would be exercised with restraint, with reason, responsibility, and conscience. But it's funny that these are things missing in our society today, in every single facet of our lives. We have conveniently interpreted our rights to allow carte blanche, license, privilege to act, say anything that comes into our empty little heads without thinking. Our elephantine passions overload our meager capacity for reason. It's an interesting note that our author discovered while researching for this column. Jefferson wanted to include conscience in the freedom of expression provisions in the Constitution. We group speech, the press, peaceful assembly, and petitioning into expression. And the dichotomy of this Hamas war on Zion strikes me as incongruous. How is it permissible for any one country to attack another without retaliation in kind by those they attacked? Doesn't matter what the weapons of the atrocities are. It's only fair to expect retribution and retaliation. But then, war is never fair. Americans rarely think before bloviating an ill-considered position. That's a testament to our meager capacity for reason. I mean, think about this. Think back in history. Imagine America giving Japan a free pass for bombing Pearl Harbor. Or the shrub, that's Little Bush 43, blowing off the attack on the World Trade Center. Even though he did accuse the wrong actors. I suppose our expectations have diminished over time. We used to elect leaders instead of puppets. But alas, that's another commentary for another time. We used to elect leaders, not sycophants. Today, our elections are popularity contests. They're beauty pageants. The lingering issue for me is our insistence on free expression as long as it agrees with our views but condemns those oppose us. Censorship? That would mean it's not free, but reserved and contingent upon some intangible but visceral emotion or passion. And who holds power in government? Who gets to define acceptability? The so-called Ministry of Truth? Who manages the managers? Our authors' views on flag burning are unyielding. And although he disagrees vehemently, he allows others their right to act. If our image as a republic is based solely on a single icon, we have an identity crisis and more significant issues. I've not even attempted to discuss with the author what his views on flag burning are. When I was a Boy Scout leader many, many years ago, even prior to that in a Cub Scout leading position, and we would take our Cub Scouts and their families, their mothers, their fathers, their sisters, etc., on camping trips. That's kind of a something that's not done in Cub Scouts. But we would do it twice a year. It was a whole family get-together thing. And I taught these kids the respect of honoring the flag. And we would have a ceremony to retire, to burn that flag. But I think our author is talking about other forms of burning, the kind of stuff that the BLM did a couple of years ago after George Floyd was killed. That's a different kind of burning. That's an anger situation. I find self-immolation abhorrent. But if a Buddhist monk is willing to sacrifice himself to make a point, who am I to douse his passions? We applaud hunger strikes and the people whose convictions strengthen their resolve, but only when we agree with that sentiment. Where's the freedom in that kind of an attitude? The 2020 summer of love is prima facie irresponsibility, a salient example of licentiousness, egged on by the media industrial complex, several cults with carnage and mayhem in mind. We excused an estimated $2 billion in damages as freedom of expression. We're constantly amazed at how redefining a word changes the event from reprehensible to allowable. The activities in the summer of 2020 were riots. They were not examples of free expression as intended by the Constitution. And for the record, the Constitution includes explicitly peaceful. The word peaceful in the right of assembly. Likewise, abortion is a dilemma. But I can't make that decision for the mother. That's between her, her conscience, and her concept of God. Most significantly, I'm not her judge, nor do I wish to be, but I am free to express my opinion as long as I'm not breaking the law or harming anyone else in protest. There's no apparent distinction between the laws of man and those of God. However, we've conveniently inserted several that we call rationalizations. You know, like that term, the end justifies the means. I guess by saying that, we're circumventing their intent. Makes us right and them wrong. My friend Charles Dickens is against abortion, personally. But he is biologically and self-defined as male and biologically unable to bear children. He says, I don't see pregnancy in my future. But I can hold and voice my views if I don't force that opinion on anyone. Everyone has and should have a choice and the freedom to believe as they wish. Everyone has a choice and can do as they want if they accept the consequences of their decision. I guess the looming question becomes, why are we, America, involved in this ideological contest? I don't like the word ideological. I understand it. But in so many respects, it's... Yeah. Unbelievable. What about the American pro-Hamas cartel? You know them as the squad. These four bimbos, Rashida, Alexandria, Ilan, and Ayanna Pressley. Who was better looking when she had hair? They demand that America broker a ceasefire between the Israelis and their attackers to stop the senseless killing of innocent Gazans. Well, that's their right. But where was the squad when Hamas attacked Israel? Must be a biased view that sponsors violence against their enemies, and yet they have a right to that opinion. Is Israel's retaliation and retribution for Hamas attack actual or invented? And are these events intended to foster some faith-based hatred? We all know. No love is lost between the Arab world and Israel. But Bennett, the question is America involved? Is America ready to trigger World War III in the Middle East? It surely will escalate into global conflict because of the other actors involved. This new axis of evil will not stand idle while we bully our way in to help Israel. $108 billion. God, Joyce. This is unbelievable. I don't get any of this. Because all of this is going to surely escalate into global conflict because of the other actors involved. The new axis of evil will not stand idle while we bully our way in to help Israel. The new axis of evil. China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, Iraq, Syria. A clandestine cadre of other Middle Eastern countries with an all-consuming of everything American. Except our money, of course. Is America the pawn in another game of international chess? Who are the players? Who are moving the pieces? Oh, I'd like to believe it's probably the military-industrial-congressional complex on our side, but is the new axis of evil in the other seat? Oh, yes, there's American citizens in Gaza and Israel. And we should work to secure their release, but direct involvement is reserved for our closest allies and friends. Israel is our ally and their friend. Is the Ukraine a close ally and friend? Why are we getting ready to dump another $105 billion into a country that we have no actual ties with? Well, Ukraine needs America for our money, just like every country whose fealty we try to purchase. Well, Mahatma Gandhi warned us that an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. But there's also this wisdom for Bertrand Russell who said, "Know thyself, know thy enemy." 1,000 battles, 1,000 victories. War does not determine who is right, only who is left. War. The massacre of people who don't know each other for the profit of people who know each other but does not massacre each other. Think about those words. War does not determine who is right, only who is left. War. A massacre of people who don't know each other for the profit of people who know each other but don't massacre one another. Do you understand all that? People kill each other for the leaders who start the war, but leaders will not kill each other. The leaders keep their hands clean because someone else does the dirty work. And yet Congress, the opposite of progress, sends America's soldiers to war, but not their children. Oh, the congressional people don't send their own kids. What good is power if you can't keep your children safe at home by sending someone else's? Ah, but rank has its privileges. Thoughts pose a valid point. Who's fighting and pulling the strings to instigate this fight, and why? Know thine enemy? Our author's favorite cartoon panel is from Pogo by Walt Kelly. We have met the enemy, and he is us. I don't live in either of those countries or even in the contested region, so I base my comments on what I see, what we read, courtesy of the media industrial complex. But by now, we should all be intimately familiar with our author's feelings toward these rapacious miscreants. By the way, rapacious shares the same Latin root word for rape. Our misunderstood, our literal interpretation of free speech really pisses me off. And yet it fits within the American Civil Liberties Union legal parameters. As long as no laws are broken, anything is permissible. The ACLU's legal premise is also in error, however. For when you consider the allegations against Trump, it all falls apart. But then Trump still can't keep his mouth shut. The federal, the state, the local governments allege that his speech or opinions incited insurrection, and his lies, as they judge them, caused banks to loan his corporation money, all of which was repaid. Trump has dared to question an election's legitimacy, which allegedly harmed several state election boards irreparably. And he conspired with others, so his actions violated the RICO Act. Usually reserved for organized crime. How is all of this different from Schumer and Waters and the squad for calling for protests against Supreme Court judges at home and in public for their decision in the Dobbs abortion case? How are the Trump indictments different from Rashida Tlaib's comments to incite protesters to demand a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas conflict, causing the mob to storm the Capitol? Isn't this insurrection based on recent legal interpretations? None of the January 6th show trial, the circus. For America, at the behest of democratic socialists, control Congress, the opposite of progress. Cost America 2.7 billion big ones, that according to the government's accountability office. On the January 6th insurrection trials and circus, 1,100 people face criminal charges. 366 have been sentenced based on carefully screened and edited evidence ensuring convictions. The Government Accountability Office are the same astute financial wizards who paid $56,000 for a hammer, $26,000 for a toilet seat, and authorized NASA to spend $9.29 million to develop a thixotropic ink for a pen to write in zero gravity. Russia used a pencil. My friends, the primary difference is that during the January 6th miscarriage of justice, the Democratic Socialist Party ran the government, meaning they control both houses of Congress. The basis for our assertion that Congress is the opposite of progress. Since partisan politics interposed and interfered in government, we've seen the degradation of our intended constitutional process. Partisan politics is wholly responsible for eradicating and abandoning the U.S. Constitution through extra legal means. That's right. Remember, the end justifies the means. Those at the power make the rules. And I think of these words refunded by Mel Gibson, the film. I fight and you may die, run and you'll live, at least a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance to come back here and tell our enemies that they take our lives, that they'll never take our freedom? My friends, my recollection tells me that at one point the citizens of this republic had that power. We traded it away to purchase temporary safety from a manufactured assailant. I want to return to the exclusion of conscience from the First Amendment. For conscience is the sense or awareness of the moral goodness or blameworthiness of one's conduct, intentions, your character, together with a feeling of obligation to do right or to be good. For faculty, power, or principle enjoining good acts. Either we've had our consciences surgically removed, or we've been programmed to accept the Ministry of Truth as our moral arbiter. Who will defend, support, or stand with us in the final judgment? Excuse me, God. I'd like to introduce the Ministry of Truth in my defense. They said it was all legal and righteous. Did I mention it didn't violate any laws? You know, our beliefs determine our conscience, and thereby our actions, my friends. No man who believes in or accepts the existence of God lives immorally and acts reprehensibly. Even the non-Christian faiths place enormous value in a righteous life, except those ideologies perverted by men who use religion as tools for self-aggrandizement, rationalizing disgraceful behavior. Once again, we must remember the end justifies the means. Our collective conscience is programmed into a corner by years of public school and anti-religious rhetoric spewing from the U.S. Department of Ignorance to convince all that seid gut klein Kinder und dem Staat gegenüber, which translates to be good little children and loyal to the state. Oh, and the reference to God? One must remember that God's will is no concern of Congress. Something's not right. So regardless of where you choose to stand on these issues, the most important thing to remember is that we are all in this together. And the decisions and the mistakes of one impact us all. Not one, not some, but all of us. Freedom of expression, choice, religion, and conscience are not selectively apportioned or bestowed on people. They are constitutional rights for every American. If any citizen of the Republic is not free, then none of us are free. And yet we have laws that we must follow. And like freedom, they cannot be administered or applied selectively. They apply to everyone or no one. Which means that all decisions must be made with these six words in mind. Not one, not some, but all. Already, my friends, long ago, from when we sold our vote to no man, the people have abdicated our duties. But the people who once upon a time handed out military command and high civil office and legions, everything now restrains itself and anxiously hopes for just two things: bread and circuses. Quote, Juvenal. But then we have to remember the government kept the Roman populace happy by distributing free food and staging huge spectacles. Juvenal called it bread and circuses. Da 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 That's all, folks. In so many respects, it all seems to be the end. Oh, copy? Charles Dickens. My friend, not his great-great-grandfather. It makes for an interesting week. Over the course of the last couple days, we've had Charles' first piece in several weeks because he was out of town. Family issues going on. We have a new piece posted at Federal Observer by Justin. We're keeping busy. Our opening piece tonight from Annie Holmquist, What to Expect When You're Expecting Totalitarianism. Somehow, some way, all of these things come together at the right time and they all coagulate. Oh, and through a total fluke, I've been sitting on something for quite a while and I just didn't do anything because I thought I'd published. I had not. There's an article that I wrote some 23 years ago entitled War, What Is It Good For? Absolutely nothing. I made a decision to publish that last night at federalobserver.com. Keep yourself busy. Keep reading. Keep studying. Don't buy into the bullshit. We can't afford to let it win. What are we closing out with, man? That I bore you to sleep. It's about that time. I fear we'd have had music running by now, but maybe Michael stepped out, went down the street to Circle K to get a cup of coffee, which is something I'm going to do, you know. I want to thank you for being with us. Maggie will be in with you tomorrow. I'll be back next week. And Lord willing, I will be. That angers me when that image pops up. That's not what we're trying to do. I don't know if I can delete that thing or not. All I want to do is give you the darn title. Share your screen. I don't want to share the screen, you scumbucket. Let's forward, remove. There we go. Yes, remove it. There we go. All right. We're past being out of time. We should have had music up two and a half minutes ago, but it happens, okay? You guys take care of yourselves. And we'll see what happens and comes out of all of this. Because it's all insane. More murders. The best of my knowledge, they're still looking for this insane, sick bastard that killed 18 to 22 people. And I think it was Maine. Guy was nuts. Never should have been out of a nut house to begin with. But then I thought, gee, they could get a hold of Alex Jones, and Alex Jones can start a whole new campaign showing how it was all phony, that it was all a mock-up, that it never happened. And, of course, the families of those people sue him, and that's the story for another day, except it isn't. All right, I'm bailing out of here. It's past time. I don't know where Michael is. There's no music. Mike, are you there? Mike? Well, guess we're out of time, folks. Sorry about that. I may be going to be leaving you with dead air here. Take care. We'll see you next week. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.